From NPR News, this is a special report on congressional hearings on the status of the Iraq War. I'm Paul Brown. Today, the top U.S. military commander in Iraq, General David Petraeus, and Ryan Crocker, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, testified before the Senate Armed Services Committee in the morning and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in the afternoon. The subject, what progress has been made in Iraq? Today's hearings come at a time when polls show Americans are increasingly displeased over U.S. involvement in Iraq. It's also a time when most congressional Democrats and a growing number of Republicans are showing increased impatience with the Bush administration's Iraq policy. It states that with continued U.S. support, Iraq can become a stable democracy, free of terrorist groups, and a major force for stability in the Middle East as a whole. Early last year, as Iraq sank deeper into violence, President Bush announced a troop increase. He said the objectives were to lower violence, to give the Iraqi government under Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki the chance to pass significant legislation, and to unify a country fractured along ethnic, religious, and political lines. Armed Services Committee Chairman Carl Levin, who's a Democrat from Michigan, opened the first hearing today with a criticism of that troop surge, a reference to increased violence in Iraq over recent weeks, and the ongoing financial costs of the Iraq operation to the U.S.
This new increase in violence raises questions about the military success of the surge. But more significantly, the purpose of the surge, as announced by President Bush last year, which was to give the Iraqi leaders breathing room to work out a settlement, has not been achieved. That reality leads many of us to once again challenge President Bush's policies. During my recent trip to Iraq, just before the latest outbreak of violence, a senior U.S. military officer told me that when he asked an Iraqi official, "Why is it that we're using our U.S. dollars to pay your people to clean up your towns instead of you using your funds?" that the Iraqi replied, "As long as you are willing to pay for the cleanup, why should we do it?" This story crystallizes the fundamental problem of our policy in Iraq. It highlights the need to change our current course in order to shift responsibility from our troops and our taxpayers to the Iraqi government, to force that government to take responsibility for their own future politically, economically, and militarily. Our current open-ended commitment is an invitation to continuing dependency. An open-ended pause starting in July would be just the next page in a war plan with no exit strategy. As another senior U.S. military officer in Iraq put it 2 weeks ago, "It is time to take the training wheels off and time to take our hands off the Iraqis' bicycle seat."
That was Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Carl Levin this morning at the committee's hearing on Iraq. Ranking Republican John McCain of Arizona, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, said the U.S. must reject what he described as calls for a reckless and irresponsible withdrawal of American forces when they are succeeding.
"I do not want to keep our troops in Iraq a minute longer than necessary to secure our interests there. Our goal, my goal, is an Iraq that no longer needs American troops. And I believe we can achieve that goal perhaps sooner than many imagine. But I also believe that the promise of withdrawal of our forces, regardless of the consequences, would constitute a failure of political and moral leadership."
There's been a recent spike in violence in Iraq. At least 10 U.S. soldiers have been killed and more than 30 injured in a 48-hour period. That's in addition to more than 50 Iraqis killed and thousands fleeing fighting in the Baghdad slum of Sadr City. In his opening statement, General David Petraeus, the commander of U.S. troops in Iraq, said that despite this increase in violence, there has been progress.
"Since Ambassador Crocker and I appeared before you 7 months ago, there has been significant but uneven security progress in Iraq. Since September, levels of violence and civilian deaths have been reduced substantially. Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and a number of other extremist elements have been dealt serious blows. The capabilities of Iraqi security force elements have grown, and there has been noteworthy involvement of local Iraqis in local security. Nonetheless, the situation in certain areas is still unsatisfactory, and innumerable challenges remain.
Petraeus said some Iraqis have turned from fighting U.S. and Iraqi forces to actively taking part in the new Iraq.
These communities also recognize that they could not share in Iraq's bounty if they didn't participate in the political arena. Over time, awakenings have prompted tens of thousands of Iraqis, some former insurgents, to contribute to local security as so-called Sons of Iraq. With their assistance and with relentless pursuit of al-Qaeda Iraq, the threat posed by AQI, while still lethal and substantial, has been reduced significantly.
And Petraeus addressed a question on the minds of many Americans: when can large numbers of American troops start to leave Iraq for good?
After weighing these factors, I recommended to my chain of command that we continue the drawdown of the surge combat forces, and that upon the withdrawal of the last Surge Brigade combat team in July, we undertake a 45-day period of consolidation and evaluation. At the end of that period, we will commence a process of assessment to examine the conditions on the ground and, over time, determine when we can make recommendations for further reductions. This process will be continuous, with recommendations for further reductions made as conditions permit. This approach does not allow establishment of a set withdrawal timetable. However, it does provide the flexibility those of us on the ground need to preserve the still fragile security gains our troopers have fought so hard and sacrificed so much to achieve.
That statement from General Petraeus was consistent with what he'd told Congress back in September, and it was largely in line with what the Bush administration has been saying all along, that conditions on the ground and not a timetable will determine troop withdrawal schedules. Ryan Crocker, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq, echoed General Petraeus's comments in his own opening testimony, but he added a warning.
Last September, I said that the cumulative trajectory of political, economic, and diplomatic developments in Iraq was upwards, although the slope of that line was not steep. Developments over the last 7 months have strengthened my sense of a positive trend. Immense challenges remain, and progress is uneven and often frustratingly slow, but there is progress. Sustaining that progress will require continuing U.S. resolve and commitment. What has been achieved is substantial, but it is also reversible.
Benchmarks set by the Bush administration for progress toward creating a unified Iraq by the Maliki government have been largely unmet. In particular, minority Sunni Muslims have not been integrated into either the government or security forces in any significant way, and legislation spelling out how Iraq's oil revenues will be distributed hasn't been passed. Still, Crocker said there has been some measurable progress.
All major parties have announced their support for elections, which will be a major step forward in Iraq's political development and will set the stage for national elections in late 2009. A vote by the Council of Representatives in January to change the design of the Iraqi flag means the flag now flies in all parts of the country for the first time in years. And the passage of the 2008 budget with record amounts for capital expenditures ensures that the federal and provincial governments will have the resources for public spending. All of this has been done since September. These laws are not perfect, and much depends on their implementation, but they are important steps.
At the Foreign Relations Committee hearing, Chairman Joe Biden of Delaware decried what he called the increasingly intolerable cost on many levels of staying in Iraq.
The risks of leaving Iraq are debatable. The cost of staying with 140,000 troops are totally knowable, and they get steeper and steeper and steeper every single day. The continued loss of life and limb of our soldiers, the emotional and economic strain on our troops and their families due to repeated extended tours, as Army Chief of Staff George Casey recently told us. The drain on our treasury, $12 billion every month, that we could spend on housing, education, health care, or reducing the deficit. The impact on the readiness of our armed forces, tying down so many troops that we've heard from Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, Richard Cody, we don't have any left over to deal with new emergencies. The inability to send enough soldiers to the real central front in the war on terror, which lies between Afghanistan and Pakistan, where al-Qaeda has regrouped and is plotting new attacks and is alive and well. and we know where they live. Last month in Afghanistan, General McNeil, who commands the international forces, told me that with two extra combat brigades, about 10,000 soldiers, he could turn around the security situation in the south where the Taliban is on the move. But he didn't readily acknowledge. He knows they're not available. There's no way he can get 10,000 troops because they're tied down in Iraq. Even when we do pull troops out of Iraq, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, says we would have to send them home for a year of rest and retraining before we could even send them to Afghanistan, where everyone acknowledges more troops are needed.
That's Senator Joe Biden, Foreign Relations Committee Chairman in the Senate. He's a Democrat from Delaware. The committee's ranking Republican, Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, has been one of the most skeptical GOP senators when it comes to the Iraq War. In his introductory statement, he said it's time for some new answers from the Bush administration.
The terms of our inquiry today are much different than they were last September. At that time, the president was appealing to Congress to allow the surge to continue, to create breathing space for a political accommodation. Today, the questions are whether and how improvements in security can be converted into political gains that can stabilize Iraq despite the impending drawdown of United States troops. Simply appealing for more time to make progress is insufficient. Debate over how much progress we have made and whether we can make more is less illuminating than determining whether the administration has a definable political strategy that recognizes the time limitations we face and seeks a realistic outcome designed to protect American vital interests.
That's Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, the ranking Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Coming up, more excerpts from today's hearings on Iraq before congressional committees, plus analysis from NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman, congressional correspondent David Wellner, and White House correspondent David Green. This is a special report on today's Senate committee hearings on the U.S. involvement in Iraq. From NPR News. From NPR News, this is a special report on congressional hearings on the status of the war in Iraq. I'm Paul Brown. General David Petraeus, the commander of U.S. forces in Iraq, and U.S. Ambassador to Iraq Ryan Crocker, today appeared before the Senate Armed Services Committee and the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Currently, more than 160,000 U.S. troops are serving in Iraq, including those added last year as part of the so-called troop surge. Ambassador Ryan Crocker said their presence is paying off.
One conclusion I draw from these signs of progress is that the strategy that began with the surge is working. This does not mean that U.S. support should be open-ended or that the level and nature of our engagement should not diminish over time. It is in this context that we have begun negotiating a bilateral relationship between Iraq and the United States. In August, Iraq's five principal leaders requested a long-term relationship with the United States to include economic, political, diplomatic, and security cooperation. The heart of this relationship will be a legal framework for the presence of American troops similar to that which exists in nearly 80 countries around the world. The Iraqis view the negotiation of this framework as a strong affirmation of Iraqi sovereignty, placing Iraq on par with other U.S. allies and removing the stigma of Chapter 7 status under the UN Charter, pursuant to which coalition forces presently operate. Such an agreement is in Iraq's interest and ours. U.S. forces will remain in Iraq beyond December 31, 2008, when the UN resolution presently governing their presence expires. Our troops will need basic authorizations and protections to continue operations, and this agreement will provide those authorizations and protections.
That's Ryan Crocker, the U.S. ambassador to Iraq. But violence in Iraq has actually risen over the past few weeks. Even with the additional fighting, General David Petraeus told lawmakers that security has improved.
Moreover, as events in the past 2 weeks have reminded us, and as I have repeatedly cautioned, the progress made since last spring is fragile and reversible. Still, security in Iraq is better than it was when Ambassador Crocker and I reported to you last September, and it is significantly better than it was 15 months ago when Iraq was on the brink of civil war and the decision was made to deploy additional forces to Iraq.
That's General David Petraeus. Intense fighting has broken out in recent weeks on the streets of Baghdad, in Basra, and other Iraqi cities. The Shiite militia of Muqtada al-Sadr has fought openly with the Shiite-dominated Iraqi security forces. These battles prompted Iraq's Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki, to launch an Iraqi offensive in the southern city of Basra. That Iraqi military effort quickly required American and British intervention, and just as quickly raised questions about when or even if Iraq's military and police were capable of defending themselves. Here's Senator Carl Levin questioning General Petraeus.
In your judgment, was the Iraqi government operation in Basra properly and carefully planned, and were the preparations adequate? Could you give me a direct answer?
Sir, the answer is, again, it could have been much better planned. It was not adequately planned or prepared. I mean, again, it was laid out to us. The objectives were described. And in fact, the process as it was laid out was logical. But I've not seen too many combat operations that have gone as they were planned, and this was not one either. The forces were deployed very rapidly, and before all conditions were set as they might have been, they were in combat.
To summarize, in terms of where I think that testimony leads me to conclude that the, not to conclude, I'll base my statement on your testimony. It was inadequately planned. It was inadequately prepared. And then that led to the use, followed by the use of American troops on that kind of planning that is totally unacceptable to me. And I think that this open-ended pause that you have recommended takes the pressure off Iraqi leaders to take responsibility for their own country.
Petraeus said that after troops from the surge are brought home by midsummer, he wants to evaluate the situation before determining whether a further troop drawdown could be started. Levin wanted to know how long it might be before a decision could be made. Petraeus was unwilling to specify, and it was at this moment that a protester started shouting, "Bring them home."
Could it be 3 months?
Sir, again, at the end of the period of consolidation and evaluation, it could be right then, or it could be longer. Again, it
Bring
is when...
Them home!
Could
Bring
can you...
Them home! Bring them home!
If you could please... We're asking the audience...
If you could
bring the gentleman out, I'm afraid we're going to have to ask him to leave.
Over at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Chairman Joe Biden was as impatient as Levin and confronted Ambassador Ryan Crocker with a hypothetical.
We talk about this in terms of, you say, to sustain the progress. What happens notwithstanding the pause if, in fact, the progress is reversed, obviously, significantly, and unalterably? What do you do then? Do you just come back and tell us the same?
Mr. Chairman, it would depend on the specifics at the time.
Let me give you the specifics. 90,000 Shia say we're not getting dealt in, and the same kind of exchange and violence between Sunni and Shia is reignited in September from Anbar province into Anbar province into Baghdad, and that same level of ethno-sectarian violence is once again established. That's a condition. What do you do?
Mr. Chairman, I really don't think you can have a productive conversation that is purely based on those hypotheticals. I mean, how did it get that way? How did it get that way? I don't see that as likely, given what is lying ahead in terms of provincial elections, for example. I think that is where you're going to see both Sunnis and Shia focus, to prepare
what
for those...
What happens if the elections don't get carried off because of violence?
Then we'll look at the circumstances and assess.
I can't think of any circumstance where you fellows are likely to recommend, no matter how bad things got, where you would withdraw, but I may be mistaken. that's part of everyone's concern, at least mine. I yield to my colleague, Senator Lugar.
Delaware Senator Joe Biden and the U.S. Ambassador to Iraq, Ryan Crocker. There are some stalwarts for the Bush policy, and they made their views known today, too. Among them, on the Senate Armed Services Committee, Joe Lieberman of Connecticut, formerly a Democrat who ran and won re-election as an independent after losing the Democratic primary.
It seems to me that there's a kind of hear no progress in Iraq, see no progress in Iraq, and most of all, speak of no progress in Iraq. The fact is there has been progress in Iraq, thanks to extraordinary effort by the two of you and all those who serve under you on our behalf. I wish we could come to a point where we could have an agreement on the facts that you are presenting to us, the charts you've shown, the military progress, the extraordinary drop in ethno-sectarian violence, the drop in civilian deaths, the drop in American deaths, the very impressive political progress in Iraq since last September.
That's Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut. Lindsey Graham of South Carolina asked General Petraeus questions illustrating Graham's view that the war is on the right track and that removing troops would be harmful. But Petraeus stopped short of saying that removing troops would necessarily be a bad thing.
If we announced as a nation we're going to withdraw a brigade out of Iraq every month,
sir, it clearly would depend on the conditions at that time. If the conditions were good and quite good, then that might be doable.
At this point in time, does that seem to be a responsible position to take, given what you know about Iraq, to make that announcement now?
Well, Senator, again, I have advocated conditions-based reductions, not a timetable. War is not a linear phenomenon. It's a calculus, not arithmetic, and that is why, again, I have recommended conditions-based reductions following the completion of the surge forces.
Armed Services Committee member John Cornyn, a Republican from Texas, asked whether Iraq could become dangerously like Afghanistan.
I want to just ask a question about the consequences of failure in Iraq, because of course, we all want our troops to come home as soon as they can. I think giving both sides the benefit of the doubt, I would say the disagreement is over whether it's based on a political or a timetable, which I would call political, without regard to conditions, and those of us who believe that it ought to be conditions-based reduction in our troops. You touched on this, I believe, a little bit, both of you did in your opening statement, but I think it's worth repeating because I think the connection that, as you pointed out, General Petraeus, our troops not only want to know that we appreciate them, but I think their families and they want to understand how their sacrifice is directly connected with our safety and security here at home. And sometimes I think that gets lost in the debates here on Capitol Hill. So traveling to Afghanistan, as I did in January before I came to Iraq, I, of course, was reminded of what happened in that failed state after the Soviet Union left, where the Taliban and al-Qaeda basically used that as an opportunity to organize, train, and launch attacks, most notoriously on September the 11th, 2001. Do you see the consequences of a failed state in Iraq, were we to withdraw before conditions would allow it, the Iraqis to govern and defend themselves, increasing the probability that Iraq could in fact become a similar failed state to Afghanistan from the standpoint of allowing space, time, and opportunity for al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations to reorganize and plot and potentially export similar attacks against the United States or our allies?
Senator, as I mentioned, not achieving our goals, our interests in Iraq indeed could lead al-Qaeda to regain lost territory, could see a resumption of the kind of sectarian, ethno-sectarian violence that tore the country apart in 2006 and into early 2007.
no telling what can happen in terms of the Iranian influence piece, and then just a general regional stability challenges.
Good.
Not to mention with the connection with the global economy. So again, there are enormous interests at stake.
General David Petraeus with Armed Services Committee member John Cornyn of Texas. Joining us now are NPR congressional correspondent David Wellna and NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman. Welcome to you both. And David, did you hear any surprises in today's testimony?
I didn't hear really surprises. I think it was perhaps a bit surprising that the questions for both Petraeus and Crocker were as soft, I guess you could say, as they seem to be. There was a lot more tension on Capitol Hill last September when these two men testified about Iraq for the first time. That was at a point when the ongoing surge was still very much being debated. And today there was really a sense that, okay, there's general agreement that the surge is ending by the end of July. And then what? And I think that really what today's entire two hearings boiled down to was the question of what is the exit strategy, if there is one. We kept hearing about conditions on the ground, and yet when General Petraeus was pressed to spell out what those conditions might be, he came back with answers such as, well, it's not a mathematical exercise, it's not an equation with coefficients, it's not mechanical, it's some people sitting around a room talking about what they can do in one place or another. Well, if that's all policymakers are left with, it's not terribly reassuring. I think that those who defend the Bush administration's handling of Iraq, especially Senator McCain, since he wants to be the next president, are in a difficult position in the sense that they are defending a policy of keeping U.S. troops in Iraq that is hugely unpopular in the country, and they are defending it by saying that not to do so would be reckless and irresponsible, in McCain's words. But at the same time, I think there's a sense of exhaustion that you could hear even from some Republicans about that, okay, it's tomorrow it's 5 years since the U.S. overthrew the Iraqi government. At what point do we stop talking about progress or success, and at what point do we say, okay, it's victory, we're going home? The victory word was not used much today.
Do you sense any increased skepticism on the part of Republicans on either committee, even if the questioning wasn't perhaps as intense this time as it was back in September?
Oh, I think that on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, the skepticism was enormously pointed. In fact, if you didn't know, if you listened to some of the Republicans on that committee, such as George Voinovich of Ohio, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, you would swear that they were anti-war Democrats because they were saying, how can it be that the U.S. is in enormous deficit spending and the Iraqi government has huge multi-billion-dollar surpluses, and yet we're the ones who are financing the operation over there. What's wrong with this picture? There was that kind of exasperation. There were not pointed attacks on the Bush administration itself, but there was a sense that you know, we are here on behalf of the people, and the people have had enough of this. What's the exit strategy?
Tom Bowman, we've heard Democrats and Republican Richard Lugar on this program express skepticism about the Bush administration's position that the U.S. will have to maintain a long-term military presence in Iraq. You know, there are many challenges in maintaining troop levels, and we heard a little bit about that as well. Can you talk more specifically about some of those challenges facing the military?
Well, the big challenge is an overstretched military, and you hear that particularly from the Army and also many on Capitol Hill. Now, if they get down to the pre-surge level of 140,000 by July, that's still more troops than they had going into Iraq in 2003. And as Petraeus said today, no sense when they can reduce beyond 140,000. He said it could be fairly soon in September. It could be months. So, and many of these soldiers have done two, three, maybe more tours in Iraq. They've also increased the deployment time in Iraq from 12 months to 15 months. And consequently, you're losing more sergeants, some of the best captains, West Point graduates are leaving. And so that's a real concern. What is the fate of the Army as a result of being overstretched? You're also having recruitment troubles. Now, they're meeting their numbers in recruiting, but they're not always getting the best recruit. Those without high school diplomas, sometimes criminal waivers. That's a real concern in the Army you hear behind the scenes from some officers. The second problem you hear a lot about is, what if something else happens elsewhere in the world, a humanitarian crisis, a combat mission? You look at some of the hotspots in the world, North Korea, Iran, Pakistan. Who would you send? So you would maybe have to send some of these troops that don't have a year's rest at home. You may have to dip into the National Guard, send some of those troops over. And you look at Afghanistan, that's a perfect example. NATO has not been able to send the number of troops needed. Thousands more trainers and combat forces are needed. And there's a resurgent Taliban. And the American commanders would like more troops, but they're just not available at this time.
If I could jump in with that.
Very briefly, David.
Wisconsin's Russ Feingold complained that there was nobody testifying who could put this in a larger context and say, well, look, we do have these troops in Iraq, but in Afghanistan, we have such and such needs. And, you know, there are trade-offs. There wasn't a sense that you had anything more than two men who are very vested in defending what they've done in Iraq today and with not many references to what else is going on and the trade-offs that are at stake here.
NPR's David Wellner and NPR's Tom Bowman. This is a special report on today's Senate committee hearings on Iraq. Coming up after a break, presidential candidates and the Iraq War. This is an NPR News special report on today's Senate committee hearings on the status of the Iraq War. I'm Paul Brown. As much as anything else, today's hearings were about what will happen in the next administration. Elections are less than 7 months away, and President Bush is due to leave office in January. The three main presidential contenders are members of the committees holding hearings today. And as might have been expected, they made sure to reaffirm the positions they've staked out on the campaign trail. Democrat Barack Obama is a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Democrat Hillary Clinton is a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee. John McCain is the ranking Republican on that committee. He supported the Iraq invasion, but he's disagreed with the way the Bush administration handled it and the aftermath. McCain wanted more troops on the ground, and he supported the Bush administration troop surge. Here he is in his introductory statement.
We have the chance to leave in Iraq a force for stability and freedom, not conflict and chaos. In doing so, we will ensure that the terrible price we have paid in the war, a price that has made all of us sick at heart, has not been paid in vain. Our troops can leave behind a successful mission, and our nation can leave behind a country that contributes to the security of America and the world. To do this, we must continue to help the Iraqis protect themselves against the terrorists and the insurgents. We must press ahead against al-Qaeda, the radical Shia militias, and the Iranian-backed special groups. We must continue to support the Sunni volunteers, the Iraqi Awakening, as they stand up to al-Qaeda in Iraq. And we must continue to build the capacity of the Iraqi security forces so they can play an ever stronger and more neutral role in suppressing violence.
Joining us now is NPR White House correspondent David Green. And David, what do you make of what John McCain just said there in the Armed Services Committee hearing?
Well, this is pretty much what we've heard on the campaign trail. John McCain has been a supporter of the war, critical of the policy that we saw from President Bush. And he often talks about the price that Americans are paying and making the argument that whatever happens, the United States has to make it a success, as he puts it, to make the sacrifice worth it. And one thing to note is that the word successful we're hearing from John McCain, not hearing from the other presidential candidates who are out there.
But he said that this commitment in Iraq could go on for many, many years or even decades.
He did, and that's risky, and we've seen the risk. Even suggesting using a phrase like 100 years, which he uttered at one point, and he meant
so
just...
So famously, right.
So famously, exactly, yeah. And meant to say just a small force like the United States has in other places in the world, but that opened the door immediately, and Democrats like Hillary Clinton immediately said, said, well, John McCain wants to continue the war for 100 years. So it's very risky, and also risky for McCain because he's trying to make the distinction between the war and potential success and the President Bush war policy, because I think there will be voters out there who have passed judgment on President Bush. His war policy might not approve of the way President Bush is carrying out the war, but might be seeing and feeling like they're seeing some success in Iraq. And those are the types of voters that John McCain feels he needs to go after. If he's too tied to President Bush and only that policy, I think he feels like he could be in trouble.
Very briefly, how is he trying to counterbalance possible public dissatisfaction with his position on the war? Is he trying to basically portray himself as an experienced leader?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, he has the foreign policy record, the years of experience, that the time overseas, the time of a prisoner of war that Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama do not have. And he has been talking about other subjects, such as Islamic terrorism, saying it's a dangerous world, saying he's the leader prepared to handle that. So pushing it to other areas of the world than Iraq.
The two Democratic presidential hopefuls, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, laid out their positions on Iraq today in their respective committees. Foreign Relations Committee Chair Joe Biden of Delaware jokingly referred to his colleague from Illinois and presidential aspirant Barack Obama.
I thank the senator from Ohio, and I wish he would not reference the senator from Illinois and cause anyone to cheer. I can only imagine the headline in the Washington Post, Biden throws out people for cheering for Democratic candidate. So I hope you'll refrain from referencing that again. I yield to the senator from Florida.
Mr. Chairman, before I continue my questioning from this morning in the Senate Armed Services Committee, I want to let Senator Obama go first because he's got a scheduling problem. So with your permission.
I'll just imagine that headline as a supporter for Hillary. I think it's a good idea. No, Senator Obama, and then we'll go back to Republican and then back to you. Senator Obama.
Beyond the joking, Obama wanted to ask Ambassador Ryan Crocker about the situation right now in Iraq.
If we were able to have the status quo in Iraq right now without U.S. troops, would that be a sufficient definition of success? It's obviously not perfect. There's still violence. There's still some traces of al-Qaeda. Iran has influence more than we would like. But if we had the current status quo, and yet our troops had been drawn down to 30,000, would we consider that a success? Would that meet our criteria? Or would that not be good enough and we'd have to devote even more resources to it?
Senator, I can't imagine the current status quo being sustainable with that kind of precipitous drawdown.
That wasn't the question. I'm not suggesting that we yank all our troops out all the way. I'm trying to get to an end point. That's what all of us have been trying to get to. And so, see, the problem I have is if the definition of success is so high, no traces of al-Qaeda, and no possibility of reconstitution, a highly effective Iraqi government, a democratic, multi-ethnic, multi-sectarian, functioning democracy, no Iranian influence, at least not of the kind that we don't like, then that portends the possibility of us staying for 20 or 30 years. If, on the other hand, our criteria is a messy, sloppy status quo, but there's not, huge outbreaks of violence, there's still corruption, but the country's struggling along, but it's not a threat to its neighbors, and it's not an al-Qaeda base, that seems to me an achievable goal within a measurable time frame. And that, I think, is what everybody here on this committee has been trying to drive at, and we haven't been able to get as clear of an answer as we would like.
And that's because, Senator, it is don't like to sound like a broken record, but this is hard and this is complicated. I think that when Iraq gets to the point that it can carry forward its further development without a major commitment of U.S. forces, with still a lot of problems out there, but where they and we would have a fair certitude that, again, they can drive it forward themselves without significant danger of having the whole thing slip away from them again, then clearly our profile, our presence, diminishes markedly. But that's not where we are now.
Before finishing, Obama laid out his impressions of the situation in Iraq today and what needs to be done.
We all have the greatest interest in seeing a successful resolution to Iraq. All of us do. And that, I think, has to be stated clearly in the record. I continue to believe that the original decision to go into Iraq was a massive strategic blunder, that the two problems that you've pointed out, al-Qaeda in Iraq and increased Iranian influence in the region, are a direct result of that original decision. That's not a decision you gentlemen made. I won't lay it at your feet. You are cleaning up the mess afterwards, but I think it is important as we debate this forward. I also think that the surge has reduced violence and provided breathing room, but that breathing room has not been taken the way we would all like it to be taken. And I think what happened in Basra is an example of Shia versus Shia jockeying for power that underscores how complicated the political situation is there and how we still have to continue to work vigorously to resolve it. I believe that we are more likely to resolve it, in your own words, Ambassador, if we are applying increased pressure in a measured way. I think that increased pressure in a measured way, in my mind, and this is where we disagree, includes a timetable for withdrawal. Nobody's asking for a precipitous withdrawal, but I do think that it has to be a measured but increased pressure and a diplomatic surge that includes Iran. Because if Maliki can tolerate as normal neighbor-to-neighbor relations in Iran, then we should be talking to them as well. I do not believe we're going to be able to stabilize the situation without them. Just last point I will make. Our resources are finite, and this has been made, this is a point that just was made by Senator Voinovich, it's been made by Senator Biden, Senator Lugar, Senator Hagel. There's a bipartisan consensus that we have finite resources. Our military is overstretched, and the Pentagon has acknowledged it. The amount of money that we are spending is hemorrhaging our budget, and al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, I think, is feeling a lot more secure as long as we're focused in Iraq and not on Afghanistan. When you have finite resources, you've got to define your goals tightly and modestly. And so my final, and I'll even pose this as a question, you don't necessarily have to answer, maybe it's a rhetorical question. If we were able to have the status quo in Iraq right now without U.S. troops, would that be a sufficient definition of success?
Senator Barack Obama. David Green, this is a very different set of positions from John McCain's, and I notice, you know, we really haven't heard McCain talk very much about how the U.S. would pay for a long-term, really extended commitment in Iraq. But this whole conversation here perhaps illustrates what seems to be an increasingly deep divide over Iraq among the American public.
Deep divide in Congress, deep divide among the American public, and deep divide on the campaign trail. And the essential question that Obama brings up is, without talking about withdrawal, can you exert pressure on the Iraqi government? And Obama would say that the answer to that is no. John McCain would say that actually talking about withdrawal is giving the playbook to the enemy. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about that as these candidates are out there stumping.
You know, Barack Obama has said he was opposed to the war from the very beginning. It's been a centerpiece of his campaign. Is there a downside for him in this stance?
This is one area of his campaign where it's hard to see the downside, because that speech laying out his opposition to the war was important. I think one of the questions is, how important was it? And Hillary Clinton has said, look, this was a speech by someone who was not in the Senate, having to make these very hard decisions that she was making at the time. And she has really tried to downplay that speech and say, you know, Barack Obama was a real novice at that point. Just giving a speech doesn't mean anything. But the speech has been important for him.
Hillary Clinton is a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, and like Barack Obama, she wants to end the war as soon as possible. And she refuted McCain's position that the U.S. must persevere in Iraq.
I just want to respond to some of the statements and suggestions that have been made leading up to this hearing and even during it, that it is irresponsible or demonstrates a lack of leadership to advocate withdrawing troops from Iraq in a responsible and carefully planned withdrawal. I fundamentally disagree. Rather, I think it could be fair to say that It might well be irresponsible to continue the policy that has not produced the results that have been promised time and time again at such tremendous cost to our national security and to the men and women who wear the uniform of the United States military.
Hillary Clinton, like Senator Joe Biden, said the U.S. is unable to focus on Afghanistan and to properly take care of its military personnel due to the management of the Iraq mission. She referred to Admiral Mike Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
In fact, Admiral Mullen last week said that the military would have already assigned forces to missions elsewhere in the world were it not for what he called the pressure that's on our forces right now. And he admitted that force levels in Iraq right now do not allow us to have the force levels we need in Afghanistan. The Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, General Cody, testified last week that the current demands for forces in Iraq and Afghanistan limits our ability to provide ready forces for other contingencies. And finally, the cost to our men and women in uniform is growing. Last week, the New York Times noted the stress on the mental health of our returning soldiers and Marines from multiple and extended deployments. Among combat troops sent to Iraq for the third or fourth time, more than one in four show signs of anxiety, depression, or acute stress, according to an official Army survey of soldiers' mental health. The administration and supporters of the administration's policy often talk about the cost of leaving Iraq, yet ignore the greater costs of continuing the same failed policy.
So, David Green, that was Hillary Clinton advocating for as swift an exit as possible from the Iraq War, and in a way saying that the Bush administration, through its failure to care for troops, through its extended deployments of troops, is not supporting the troops. Any news here?
Not a lot. And one thing to mention is Afghanistan. Hillary Clinton has been increasingly talking about that in saying that the Iraq War has become a distraction, that troops could be elsewhere. And she's basically called Afghanistan the forgotten war in some respects. But the backdrop basically remains the same for Hillary Clinton, still going back to that vote in 2002 in favor of military action in Iraq and trying to convince voters that she's honest when she says that it's time for withdrawal, when she was a person who supported the war.
Is she still having a difficult time with that vote on the campaign trail? What's she saying?
Absolutely. I mean, she still says the same thing. She has not gone quite so far as to apologize and say she did something wrong, but she has said that she would like to have the vote back, and if she knew everything she knows now, then she would have voted differently. But Paul, we see in the polls, I mean, Pennsylvania's one big example. She's leading Barack Obama in the polls. The economy is the top issue. She's leading among voters who talk about the economy. But if you look at polls, of voters who say that Iraq is their number one concern, she's losing. So it's still a trouble spot for her. That vote, I think, is still on some voters' minds, and it's not going to go away.
Tom Bowman, what about military issues in Iraq? Anything else to add?
Well, you know, it's funny. There's, I think, a lot of wiggle room in the positions of both Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama when it comes to Iraq. Now, Clinton talks about cutting combat troops in Iraq, but also she says about keeping what she calls specialized units that would go after al-Qaeda in Iraq, protect diplomats and humanitarian workers. And Obama talks about cutting combat troops, but also what he calls keeping residual forces for much of the same reason. Neither is saying how many forces would be needed or for how long, but a lot of military people I talk with say you'll need tens of thousands of troops in Iraq for years, not only for combat duty, but for support functions, helping the Iraqi security forces, maybe trainers. So, again, there's a little wiggle room in their positions on Iraq.
And there's nothing more important than wiggle room politically, because we're going to hear these candidates go back out there on the campaign trail. I'm sure we're going to hear them say, when I was in the Senate talking to Petraeus and asking questions, you know, I said this, I said that. And for both Obama and Clinton, it's all about doing enough to be able to still say they are against the war, but also say we want to bring them out responsibly.
So, David, where does this leave the Bush White House in its final months? Is this set of hearings going to be regarded by the administration as just one more bump in the road before the administration leaves office in January?
Well, you get the sense, Paul, that President Bush is looking long-term. I mean, he has talked about his belief that his legacy in the end is going to be something positive, that historians will say that he made the right decision, which gives you the impression that he doesn't think this is suddenly going to become a popular war in the coming months. And as we saw today, you know, it's a very good chance that he's going to leave the White House with a pretty sizable number of troops on the ground. So I think President Bush is looking long-term and hoping.
Looking at his legacy at this point.
You got it.
And believing that he's making the right decisions. Well, thanks very much, NPR's David Green, White House correspondent, Tom Bowman, our Pentagon correspondent, and David Wellner, our congressional correspondent, for being with us this evening. This has been a special report on congressional testimony by General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker on the Iraq War. They appeared before the Senate Armed Services and Foreign Relations Committees. I'm Paul Brown. Our special coverage of today's Senate hearings was directed by Gwen Uten and edited by Stu Seidel, with production help from Tom Bullock, Katia Dunn, and Phil Harrell. Our audio engineers were Lauren Driller, Mitch Eaton, Melissa Marquis, Andy Rosenberg, and Kurt Stallnaker. Special thanks to Gemma Hooley and Sharon Thomas. The deputy managing editor of NPR News is David Sweeney. And this is NPR News.